Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia. Today I'm delighted to welcome back a guest who brings clarity, practicality and calm into conversations many of us are quietly struggling with. We're struggling with time, balance, energy and how we live sustainably without burning ourselves out. Alison McRobbie is a multi-business owner, well-being advocate, an author and a number one Amazon best-selling author of My Health Journal. Her work supports people in building healthier relationships with time, energy and self-awareness, especially those juggling with work, health and life pressures. Alison has a grounded way of reminding us that balance isn't about doing more. It's about noticing patterns, working with our capacity and creating space to listen to ourselves. Alison, welcome back to the show. It's so lovely to have you with us again.
Hello, Belinda. Thank you so much. Really honoured to be back again. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you so much for such a lovely introduction. I hope you're well.
I'm good, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you back. Now, Alison, many people feel as though they're constantly chasing time rather than living within it. From your perspective, what's driving that feeling?
Well, most people are probably chasing time because they're probably doing things that they don't want to be doing. They're probably working somewhere they don't want to work, or maybe they've started a business and they've become a slave to that. And lots of people chase time because people don't often reach out for help when things aren't going well. So when we are chasing time, we're running out of time because we're maybe not doing something very well, or we're not doing it in the way that we could be doing it to be more productive for ourselves, for our goals. So it's a mismatch, often a complete mismatch of what the goal is compared to what the perception of that goal is as well. And lots of people live in imposter syndrome, right? Lots of people, they have adopted somebody else's lifestyle that doesn't really fit into theirs.
Absolutely. And that's a really valuable distinction as well. And I think that mismatch is huge when people are living someone else's version of success or start doing work that drains them. Time does feel like the enemy. And where you've mentioned imposter syndrome and not asking for support, and it creates a constant sense of running behind, even when the goal itself was never truly theirs to begin with. So thank you for sharing that. And you're working with people who are juggling health, work and life pressures constantly. How does time management need to change when energy and capacity aren't consistent?
In my experience, working with business owners in particular, and obviously I work with lots of people, have done in the past with my previous employment, where I used to work with a lot of people that had quite serious health issues. It wasn't enabling them in their eyes, and quite often is the case, not to work. Time management, how it needs to change, again, it depends on the perception and your goals, I think, of what you're trying to achieve. So we currently live in a bit of a status quo in the UK where health and disability in particular has been something that is used as a term, really, to stop people from doing other things. And the reason why that is because genuine help is very difficult for people to come by. You know, counselling, therapy, access to, you know, healthcare in a reasonable time frame. So people feel often very suspended in their own life, and that suspension can be for years. And when people feel that they're not making any progress, because in a sense they're kind of not in their life plan, their life trajectory, then people start to struggle with mental health, work issues, life pressures, and everything starts to kind of become very overwhelming. And when you have, when mental health in particular starts to impact you, it's very difficult to have a time management schedule that works for you, because often you're trying to, again, do something that you know isn't really right for you. It's kind of like that square peg in a round hole.
Yes, and that sense of suspension is so damaging. And when people feel stuck outside their own life, waiting for support, clarity, or permission to move forward, I know that time stops feeling usable. And where you've mentioned adding mental health struggles into that and traditional time management, it just doesn't fit. And I completely get that. It has to adapt to the person, not force them into a system that was never designed for their reality. And you speak about working with time rather than against it. What does that look like in practice for you in particular?
For me in particular, everyone has their own goals. So I have my goals, what I want to do in business, the things I need to do in my house, you know, when I need to do the laundry, when I need to tidy up the kitchen, and these things.
It's never ending.
And it's how do you work that out? So I have times when I often relate to this as high energy and low energy times as well. And this works particularly well with people with physical disabilities and also people who are neurodivergent. And I have times in the day when I know I will concentrate more. If you're on medication, I take medication. I have certain times in the day where I know I'm going to be doing certain business tasks and things like that around certain times of the day because of the effects of medication, or because I need it to fit in with other things like I said, basic household tasks and things like that I need to do. So that is why, alongside my health journal, I actually have another journal called the Sorted Mental Health Planner, and it doesn't have any dates in, it has no times in, because for some people, depending on where they're at in, you know, with what they're doing in their life and where they are with their health, actually having a time to do something by a certain time can be totally counterproductive.
And I think that's such a practical, compassionate way of looking at it as well. Working with your energy, not against it, makes time feel more manageable. And when people understand that, what their high and low energy windows are, especially with health needs or neurodiversity routines, can become supportive rather than overwhelming. And it makes so much sense with what you're sharing. And that's what we were talking about earlier as well, that self-awareness. So how can people begin to recognize when they're pushing themselves too hard instead of working in the flow?
I think if people are really honest with themselves, they start to see the cracks. They start to feel the cracks. And at its biggest impact, I refer to this as something called the topple effect. When three things aren't going very well at all, that is the time when people see the biggest impact, where they will have a bit of a crash out, or they'll get really stressed out, or they will get burnt out, or just feeling really down in mood. And again, that's because they're pushing themselves too hard. So recognizing that not every hour is equal. We don't have to fill every single hour with loads and loads of tasks to do. And at the other end, we don't have to force the same output all of the time. So again, making your decisions count on different energy moments, I think are really, you know, I think it's really important, because it compounds over time. They're methods and processes that compound over time. And if you ignore those little cracks and you ignore those little topple effects, the kind of effect of that long term is not going to be very good for your health at all.
Thank you so much so far, Alison. We're going to take a short break now, and when we return, we'll explore balance in real life, not as an ideal, but as something that adapts with us.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and I'm here in conversation with the amazing Alison McRobbie. Welcome back, Alison.
Hello, Belinda, and welcome back too.
So, balance is something many strive for but rarely feel. How would you describe balance in a realistic lived sense rather than an idolized one? Because we hear about these things all the time, don't we, Alison, where people on social media are sharing tips and tools of how to balance your lifestyle, but it's not always easy to put into practice. So what's your view on that?
I think a lot of what we see online, unfortunately, about balance is just not realistic. It's like, wake up at 5 a.m. and journal and have a matcha tea by 7 and then go to hot yoga therapy and, you know, do all of your housework before you've even started your workday. Like, nobody really does that unless, I don't know, you're some celebrity, I guess, perhaps, and you might do that maybe one day a month. I don't know. I've got no idea. But I think it's very, I think it's misrepresented. We know when the situation for ourselves is balanced in life, because you have that inner calm. You feel that inner calm when you're sat down. You just feel it. You feel relaxed. You feel that inner calm instead of feeling stressed out and anxious and, you know, tap-footing and unable to focus and concentrate. So again, you know, doing what is right for you isn't necessarily the, you know, it's not the same for everybody, but yes, what people, and I think people need to give themselves more permission, right? More permission to do what is right for them instead of everybody else. Like, everyone is just, we're all living our own lives. Live your life. There are far too many people criticizing other people. And
yes,
you know, if it works for you, that's good. You know, if it works for you, you do you, I'll do me kind of attitude. I think it's true.
I love that because I agree with you, because a lot of what's sold as balance online is more performative and than practical, and real balance isn't a perfect routine. It's that sense of inner calm, like you said, and steadiness. And you're right, giving ourselves permission to do what genuinely works for us rather than chasing someone else's version makes all the difference. And it comes back down to that sense of self-awareness. What role does self-awareness play in creating balance, especially for people who are used to powering through? We spoke earlier, Alison, when you were saying that you were spending 6 hours doing a certain task, going on to doing your coaching, going on to do your writing, whatever it is. What is it that helps people power through? What helps you?
Well, I think really for me, it's two things. It's one, my own goals. And secondly, it's not letting the people that depend on me and down. And thirdly, it's not letting myself down. So we all know I've been involved in a very large court process, and I had to do all of the legal work myself, which was grueling is not even the word. Very time draining, energy draining. But I still had to run my business, and obviously that did have an impact on my health. I'm not going to lie about that. So being aware of that now, because it's like everything, when you're actually in an emotional state or in an emotional situation, it's very difficult to step outside of yourself and outside of your life and look in. So that's when tools are going to come into play. That's when therapy, counselors, journals, even regular chats with someone you trust, a healthcare practitioner, you know, someone who's medically qualified, are going to come in, because all of those people and these types of resources, they all have those pillars of balanced measurements. So when we're talking about balanced measurements of what we were just talking about, which is you know, getting up early in the morning and drinking matcha tea, you said those words, how it's sold to us. And most of the time, what we see on social media is user-generated content or content marketing made to look like a lifestyle, but actually it's just marketing, because most of the time people are trying to sell a product, a service, gym wear, protein powders, whatever, right? So that's why I always take my advice in particular when it comes to, you know, self-awareness and health at the start, always from qualified practitioners, always.
Exactly. And a lot of what looks like lifestyle online is really just marketing. As you said, it's created to sell something, not to reflect real everyday life, and that can distort people's expectations of what balance actually looks like. And it's not a bad thing. I mean, sometimes having those tools in front of you and creating tools that have worked for you and actually sharing them with the public is always a good thing. One of the reasons I understand you wrote your best-selling journal, My Health Journal, because you initially wrote that and created that for yourself, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Actually, I wrote it for myself. I had to write it for myself because I was having to evidence the how the impact of my health was affecting me adversely. And when you're not a healthcare professional that's writing up reports, and when you're not like a barrister and you're not used to doing these, you know, presenting information in a certain way, it's very daunting. And when I started to share snippets of it actually online with my audience, really, my followers and people that have understood my journey up until now, People were asking, you know, can you do one for me? Can you print one for me? So that's how it came about. And whereas it is a tool, it is a resource, but it's kind of like simultaneous things. One is that it can be used to help you, yes, of course, in more of a formal setting, but it's mostly as well for the self-awareness. Because when we have health conditions and we have disabilities, we are often, through, you know, the culture of how the UK is, and probably lots of other countries as well, we're taught to focus a lot on what we can't do and the weaknesses that we have in our life because of our health conditions. Mm. Whereas we can also kind of use the journal to work out other things, you know, other things that are going a little bit better for us. And then within it, it does have a 52-week planner as well. So you can plan different things around your health journal on the good days or the better days or the higher energy days as well. So it's about getting that balance back in the self-improvement way or self-development way, as well as having that resource there if you need it.
And I think that's really important as well. And it's that shift, isn't it? Turning something that was daunting and draining into a practical tool. But sadly, there are still a lot of people that find journaling quite daunting as well. What makes my health journal approachable and sustainable for everyday use? What makes it stand out? And really, what made it an Amazon bestseller?
I think the reason why it's an Amazon bestseller is because it hits those two points. Like I said, it helps people summarize their health, evidence their health, and also log it, but log it in a dual fashion, log it in a double way. One, so that it can be used in a more formal context, because that is something people genuinely struggle with. And it also, it empowers people. Again, you would be surprised, Belinda, yourself as a doctor, to know how many people just leave their own health records up to an organisation, not even necessarily a doctor. And I always say, this is your body, this is your health. You should be in control of the information that relates to it. You should know what records you have. You should know how your health affects you. You should know the symptoms that you have. You should be tracking them. You should be, you know, you should be keeping that evidence, because it's your body. It's important. And I think people feel empowered. It's like giving people feel that they've got their power back again. They feel more empowered, I think, to do more about it, because they feel more in control of their health, which is a good thing. It's a structured approach. It's not complicated to fill out. And over on YouTube, I have a complete playlist, actually, where I do go through different pages, because people comment, how do I complete the disability trigger point tracker, for example? What is it for? How can it help me? And then I'll do a video on it and I'll explain it to people. And it's just explaining terms that people don't really know in basic, like in plain English, right? Mm. And the reason why it might be useful for them as well, because lots of people don't know, for example, about reasonable adjustments in the workplace, or even in their own businesses. They don't know about disability trigger points. Lots of people just don't know about these terms and what they could mean to help people.
Absolutely. That sense of ownership is key. Thank you so much, Alison, for such valuable insight. We'll take another short pause here for our commercial break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise, elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm here with the amazing Alison McRobbie. Let's bring everything together. That time and that balance and the flow and journaling. I mean, in your experience, Alison, what shifts when people start tracking how they actually feel rather than how they think they should feel?
Well, it depends on the reason why they're using the health journal. Obviously, lots of people are using it for evidence in assessments, healthcare assessments, for example, the PIP assessment. And sometimes when people are talking, in my experience, for example, with people that have bought the health journal, they've had to make the complete change about just reeling off a long list of what they've got, you know, what are their health conditions. So when they use the health journal, not only are they obviously, they understand what they've got at this point, they're writing down, you know, the diagnosis that they've got, or even if they don't have the diagnosis, what they think their diagnosis is, because there are long waiting lists for certain things like ADHD or autism, that sort of, those sorts of assessments and other things as well. It takes a long time. But people start to be a lot more honest with themselves because there's no judgment. This is their journal for them. And I think this is so important, because particularly in application for certain support benefits or healthcare or disability benefits, that level of judgment for every single person that applies is like used as an iron rod. And what happens is that it stops people from being honest with themselves because they're scared to. So I think when people are more honest with themselves, they don't have to show all of this journal. They might just provide certain pages for certain assessments or for certain pieces of evidence. But it's, again, it comes back to that empowerment. It's like, okay, I'm feeling like this on this day, and this is what I can do, this is what I can't do. And they're able to see the patterns in their life with their health in real time. And I think that is perhaps one of the biggest gifts in healing, if it's possible, and self-development. It's self-awareness. And lots of people don't want to become self-aware because they're scared. And that's like, I don't want to be cliche by going, and that's okay to be scared. But when people have had to be defensive for so long about their health and how it impacts them, is okay for them to be more honest about it, because no one's going to be judging them in this health journal, no one at all.
And I think that's a really crucial point, because when there's no judgment, people can move beyond the labels and really describe how their health affects them daily. And also, from my perspective, journaling helps people because it moves those thoughts out of the emotional centers of the brain and into the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for reasoning and regulation. And I think that's really important for anyone who may be suffering physically, because writing actually reduces emotional overload. It lowers stress hormones like cortisol and helps the brain organize experiences into meaning. So it's got a double effect there, hasn't it, really? And over time, this improves emotional regulation. It gives people clarity and that psychological resilience, which is so important. So I think you've also covered how journaling can better support decision making, because it's giving people that emotional and mental clarity, particularly around rest and boundaries and priorities. So when you started journaling and it was there to help you process, how did it help you actually list your priorities and your boundaries? What was it that impacted you straight away as soon as you started journaling?
Well, this is a bit of a deep dive, this one. When I started journaling, this was actually a suggestion by my therapist. I had over a year of cognitive behavioural therapy because of certain things I was going through with my then employer. And my depression at the time was so bad, I was like Hagrid. Honestly, I know it's probably going to shock a lot of people, but I actually still do have quite bad social anxiety. But I wouldn't go out, I wouldn't speak to anybody. I was really in the depths of depression. And when you are quite badly depressed, time is just a long time. It's just a stretch. Every day is like, not even days, it's just periods in your life. And for me, my therapist said to me, why don't you start journaling? And when I started doing that, I started seeing patterns in feelings and how I felt and emotions. And through looking at that, we kind of decided, looking at it together, that Fridays was the day that I would have a lift in my mood. And my therapist said, right, on Friday, I want you on a Friday, every Friday, to get up, put a really nice dress on, do your hair and your makeup, even if you're going nowhere, which of course she knew I was going nowhere because I had really bad social anxiety, but I would, and I did it. And it was just that started the real healing journey for me, because really, I suppose, I don't want to say it was like self-harm or self-neglect or anything like that, but I was just so genuinely depressed that I couldn't really even see a way out. And obviously, again, working with a qualified healthcare professional, they could. And but if I hadn't have been journaling and we couldn't see that pattern, there probably wouldn't have been an inroad. I don't know how she would have found an inroad in, because I was the biggest, I just didn't believe in counselling. I was like, no, this is not going to work for me. I'm a strong person. I'm not going to let somebody inside my emotions and my brain. Everybody knows what I'm like. You know, I'm quite a strong character. And obviously, when you feel quite broken and you feel emotionally distraught, as I was at the time, you're not open to trusting people. It's a very difficult place to trust people. So if that's you and you are listening to this, start by trusting yourself. Start by trusting your emotions, because they are valid, and how you feel and pop them in your health journal. And then maybe a time will come, if you're not seeing someone and you need to, because, and we say, what was the need? Me, I just wanted my life to get better. I knew it was not going well. I knew all of these things were affecting me, like the thing, the topple effect. And I just wanted my life back. I did not have any energy. I was just not in a great place. Mm-hmm. And I wanted my life back. And I just found the depression and all of the anxiety and everything else that I had, it was impacting me so much. I couldn't like even get dressed in the day. You know, I was in a very dark place. So to be brutally honest, it really helped me so much because there was no judgment. I did not have to show the pages I didn't want to have to show. I didn't have to show anything at all. But what it did help, like I said, was it helped me process what was really going on, because it's all in your head sometimes. Put it on paper and see that pattern. And again, the pattern is there. It's just a pattern. It's not you shouldn't be doing this or you should be doing that. It's just a pattern. And with working with the right people who are qualified, and I will say this because there are lots of people out there that, you know, esteem to be, you know, certain therapists, and, you know, we see it quite a lot in the ADHD world. Work with people who are proper accredited professionals that are regulated by health bodies, like, for example, your good self, Dr. Belinda. Work with proper professionals in, you know, your local health service. Please do that. And I think the two together can be, well, look at me. Look at the change, look at the impact that it's had on me. It's enabled me to become that strong person again. It's enabled me to go forth in my life and do loads of amazing different things that I'm really proud of now. And to be honest with you, if I hadn't have had that suggestion given to me, and if I hadn't have been journaling, probably wouldn't have happened. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, quite possibly.
And I think, first of all, thank you for sharing all of that. And that's such an important place to start. Trusting your emotions is often the first step back to yourself, and journaling creates a safe space for that honesty. And I appreciate all the examples that you've given, because they're very powerful, using personal tools like journaling, and especially the one that you've created now, and using it properly alongside those professionals, gives people both that self-awareness and safe expert support. And that combination is often where real lasting change happens. And for those trying to build a healthier relationship with their work and life, how do time awareness, balance, and journaling work together?
I think, in all honesty, if the best way, I think, to deal with time management and your health in a work or business situation is to be selfish, to put yourself first, because no one else is going to do it for you. No one. No one is going to put you first. You have to be selfish. And there's nothing wrong with feeling the way you feel, whether it's down or, you know, erratic or anxious. And an actual fact is, you know yourself, Belinda, many of the things that we feel when we are feeling very sick or we're feeling very stressed, this is your body's natural way of protecting you.
Yes.
And it shouldn't be denied. You should be noting it. You shouldn't be ignoring it. And you should be writing it down in that journal and seeing what that pattern is. Maybe it's someone you're seeing regularly. Maybe it's the people you're around or the environment that you're in. And when you start journaling and you see these things, lots of these things can be changed. For example, I do not put myself around anybody that makes me feel negative about myself and what I'm doing. I have a small circle. I have a very small circle. I won't engage in toxic practices. I don't engage in gossiping. I think it's very negative. I don't think it's very good. And I make sure I regularly look at all of the laws, in particular when it comes to disability laws, reasonable adjustment laws, and things like that. And I try to let as many people know about it as possible, because when people don't know their rights about these sorts of things, they don't know what they can have access to help them. For example, reasonable adjustment at work. It might be, and everybody thinks a reasonable adjustment at work is, you know, like a ergonomic chair or a specific mouse, but it might be your working environment, how you're working, the times you're working, whether you're working at home, whether you're working elsewhere. There are lots of different things that can be adjusted to support you. So you can still be you, you can still do your healing process, you can still do your self-care, you can do lots of different things. When you have all control of those three things together. So the control starts with you owning your kind of health, the knowledge of your health, and what you can currently do at that moment in time, and what you're kind of struggling with. And there's nothing wrong with the struggle either, you know, everything can be adjusted, and it's not all going to be done in a day either.
No, that's the thing. I think that's the thing, we're not very patient with ourselves. And but you're absolutely right, the valuable key points that you've pointed out there. When you understand your health, your symptoms, your patterns, your rights, and how you work best, you regain that control. And people fail to realize it is in your control. Those three things together give people that choice, that stability and ability to move forward in a way that genuinely supports their well-being. And finally, Alison, if listeners were to take just one gentle step this week towards living with more flow and clarity, what would you encourage them to begin with?
I would encourage them to really be honest with themselves, like really honest. You know, what really irritates you? Okay, we've all got stuff that irritates us. What is it? Well, let's start with the negatives first of all. What irritates you? What is making you feel anxious? It might be an environment, as I said, it might be a place you're working, it might be something you're struggling with in your life. And then try and weigh it up with something that makes you feel good. And if you're quite depressed, you're probably going to say nothing makes me feel good, because I was in that place as well. So that's when you need to go back in your memory and you need to think about what used to make you feel good. And it might just be that things have changed now and that's not going to work for you anymore. And then that's going to be a nice point of discovery where you can go, well, I don't think that's going to work for me anymore. So I know what I don't want. So maybe I'm going to spend a bit of time investigating and discovering what I might want. And that again, is a little bit of a change. And I think I'll probably say one thing to finish. Everything is fluid. And when we have health conditions, particularly health conditions that are disabilities that aren't going to go away, that are there all of the time, every single thing in life is fluid. There is always going to be change. There is always going to be things that are going better some days and worse others. And I think a lot of us have a false expectation because of society and social media that everything needs to be a 10-10, right? On performance all of the time. And quite frankly, it's just not true. And it's just not realistic. So be kind to yourself. If you're having that day when it's like, yeah, it's nothing's just working, then maybe that's the time to really pull back on tasks for that day or that week. Be more gentle with yourself. When you know you have something coming up and you know it's going to be a really stressful day, then build out your week around it, where you remove anything that you can do that's just going to add more time tasks or stress tasks onto it. Just remove them, just take them away. There is a really good book, I'm going to quote another book, which is called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers. And she talks about the blank canvas. And that is a really good way of looking at your life when you just feel so lost, Just think of your life like that blank canvas and just start again. Fill that blank canvas with things that you actually want in it. And that can be the first point of visualization that can help you towards your self-healing and self-development journey.
And that's simple. That's such a lovely way to frame it. Seeing your life as a blank canvas removes the pressure of perfection. It gives permission to start small, make new choices, and rebuild in a way that actually fits who you are right now in the present moment. Alison, thank you so much for your insight, honesty, and your calm approach makes these conversations feel achievable, not overwhelming, and that's such a gift. So where can our listeners find you, Alison?
Oh, you can always find me on my website, alisonmcrobbie.com. If you're on my email list, you'll be pointing to lots of different places. The Justice Journals TV is what I'm the host of on YouTube. But yeah, alisonmcrobbie.com, you will find out really where everything is going on in my life and the different things I'm doing. So that's probably the best place to start.
Thank you so much. And to our listeners, if today's conversation resonated, I encourage you to explore Alison's work and her book, My Health Journal, which offers a practical way to notice patterns, slow down, and reconnect with yourself. I'm Belinda Walia, and this has been the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. And to close today's show, I've chosen a song that reflects flow, ease, and gentleness. Let It Be by Lambrinth. Until next time, take care of your time, your energy, and yourself. That train.